what is the theory of evolution? It should also be stated that we shouldn't even really call it the theory of evolution or even the theory of creation, because again, I want to use the rules of science equally. One of the problems that I've also seen with some people that teach on creation science is they make fun of the scientific perspective so much that, again, people that believe that, they're just going to feel mocked and it's not going to draw them to Jesus. So I want to try to give an even-handed treatment of both models. The reason why we should call them models, again, both the creation model and the evolution model, which are the only two real theories or, again, models for the beginning of the universe. One model, the creation model, is God created the universe. The second model is the universe just happened as a result of time and random chance. Those are the only two models. So if we can disprove one of them, the other one must be true, because again, they're the only two models that exist for the beginning of the universe. And in fact, Christianity stands alone, as the Bible stands alone, because Muslims have some part of the Old Testament, Jews, and then Christians believe in the Old Testament as well. But the Bible is the only one that explains the beginning of time and space, stuff and space. All the others, the Buddhism, the Hindu, Vedas, I believe is like a list of writings, they all begin with the assumption that matter and space already exist, and then things happen to result in people and Earth. But only the Bible talks about the beginning of space and time. So again, this is the only model. Theory of evolution can't really be called a theory, because in order for in science, again, we're going to talk about a little bit about the rules of science, in order for something to be a theory means you have to be able to test it. In order for something to be a fact means you have to be able to reproduce it in laboratory settings and observe it. Well, we're talking about things that happened a long time ago, so we can't recreate it in the laboratory. We can't recreate the universe in a laboratory. And we'll talk later on about whether you can create life in a laboratory or not. You can't. But we'll talk about some of the experiments that the people have pointed to. Say, see, there you go, right there. It could happen. But can't reproduce it in a laboratory. It wasn't observed. And so we can't even call it a theory. It can only be called a model. Again, if theories have to be tested, you can't test a theory of the beginning of time, because you can't do it, again, in a laboratory. So we need to call it a model. But what's interesting is in college, again, most universities, they don't even teach it as a theory. Evolution is a done deal. It's fact. What's also interesting, I have heard scientists and seen it in print, they believe that evolution is the most undeniable fact in the universe. That everything in the universe can be explained into the umbrella of evolution. That's what we're going to talk about. Nothing has ever been seen to evolve ever in history. There's no evidence, and we're talking about evidence, to support the theory of evolution. And we'll talk about some of the things that have been held out. And they says, well, what about this? What about this? We'll talk about some of those things. There's also, as you can see me kind of trying to gather my thoughts, what I'm trying to do here is to gather all the bodies of knowledge in science and theology and philosophy and tie it all together in a way that makes sense. But again, remember, the Bible, I'm going to hold out a hypothesis here that we'll be testing as we go through. The Bible's true. God created the heavens and the earth, just like he said, and that it makes sense, and we can use the rules of science to look at the evidence and find out whether it's true or not. So, okay, evolution. How did it begin? The best way that I could come up with is to talk about evolution is to first begin at the beginning. Evolution has problems at every step of the way, in my opinion, and I'll give you evidence for that as we go through it. But most popularly, it's thought to have begun with what is historically being called the Big Bang. The Big Bang theory, again, it's not a theory, it's just a model because you can't test it because it was, again, happened long ago. But the Big Bang theory still stands as pretty much what people believe to be the beginning of all things. It has come under huge fire in the last 10 or 15 years by evolutionists. That is, people that deny God, they still have big problems with the Big Bang theory. What's also funny, I don't know if you've ever read Far Side. You've probably never heard Far Side mentioned from the pulpit before either. But the Far Side magazine is a group of scientists. There's some very hilarious things in Far Side. Some things I don't care much for. I don't read the Far Side books anymore. But one in particular, one is I'll share. It's a real funny one. It says how evolution really happened, and it shows two fish. They're playing baseball in the water. And one of them's got a mitt, one of them's got a bat, and then you see the ball up on dry land. The fish are looking up on dry land because part of evolution is that fish went up on land and grew legs and lungs and became sort of how it really happened according to the Far Side is the fish saw the ball up on land, went up on land and liked it. We'll get to that later. Okay. But the one I was talking about was it's a group of scientists that are gathered around. And they're all wearing lab coats, and they've got goatee beards, and they've got glasses, so they're obviously scientists. And one guy's kind of chuckling and says to the other, and he says, there's Rothberg again trying to gain some credence to his little bang theory. And what if the guy's like 4 foot tall, and you can see him trying to explain his theory to another scientist who's listening to him. But it's called a little bang. Well, now, there's along with the Big Bang, the Big Bang is thought to be a big hot bang with lots of heat generated. But there's also a little bang theory, which is a cold beginning. So here's what the Big Bang theory is. Let me also back up. I have a theory that a lot of people talk about a lot of things that they have absolutely no understanding of. But they speak it as one who has authority. Mine was, I'd hear people say, well, Einstein proved with theory of relativity that the evolution must be true. And it's like, you know, I bet you have no clue what Einstein's theory of relativity was. So I went and bought a book. It's at one of the nature stores that are at malls. It was called Relativity, the General and Special Theory by Albert Einstein. So I said, I'm going to read it. If I talk about the theory of relativity, I want to be able to back it up. What's kind of funny is he wrote it, in the preface it says, this book is not written for the theoretical physicist. It is written for the average layman. Anyone with a high school understanding of math will be able to comprehend the things that I'm going to write about in this book. Well, I read the book, and it's like, man, that must have been one awesome high school math program that he's talking about. If you've ever had to read one paragraph 4 or 5 times and say, okay, I follow the first 3 words, then he loses me after that. And he says things like, it is therefore obvious that, and then he says something that's obvious to him and God, but to nobody else. But Einstein's theory of relativity has absolutely nothing to do with the theory of evolution. In fact, Einstein said he didn't believe that God threw dice to result in the universe, random chance. All that the relativity has to do with anything is that Einstein showed that when things move the speed of light, it all changes. Space, time, it just gets weird when you move to the speed of light. But since we're not traveling at the speed of light, it's not relevant to the discussion of evolution. As people say, well, Einstein proved this. No, he didn't. In what aspect of relativity do you believe that he proved your point? Well, you religious hypocrite, you. And then they try to change the subject. So I know a tiny bit about it. At least I've read the book. That probably puts me above 99% of people. I didn't understand any of it, but I have read it. I've looked at the words. Okay. Begins with a Big Bang. What's the Big Bang? It begins with a singularity. Okay? What's a singularity? It's a point of nothingness. So what does that mean? Okay, here's the deal with how the Big Bang began is everything in the universe, all the stars, all the dust, all the space, again, empty nothingness, all the air, all the mountains, all the oceans, etc., etc., was compressed. Not compressed into something the size of the Earth, not even compressed into something the size of a basketball, not even compressed to something the size of the atom, not even something compressed to the size of an electron, in fact, smaller than, now we get real theoretical, electrons you can pretty much, now you get into quarks and leptons and these subatomic particles, even smaller than that. Me, I'd call that nothingness. But what we have is supposedly everything at some point was compressed into that singularity. How did it compress? Somehow is the answer. Here's what's fascinating to me. If I were to try to write an article in a scientific journal, and I'm going to talk about some aspect of geology, I'm going to get my degrees in geology. So here we are. I'm going to write a treatise on the formation of the Rocky Mountains. Some thoughts, some thoughts. You put those in to make it sound snappy so you hope they'll publish it. And I would say, here's my theory. Somehow, a big something happened, and they're the Rocky Mountains. They would say, somehow is not very scientific. Dr. Evans, where'd you get your doctor from? A mail order program? But somehow is throughout the evolutionary theory. In fact, another book that I've read, I say this, and why do I say this? Only say that you get a lot of degrees, you feel the need to read books so that people will think you know what you're talking about. But I gave up on that a while back. But a book called Stephen Hawking, it's called A Brief History of Time. Fairly interesting, and he's wrong on several key issues. And he's a big proponent of the Big Bang Theory and black holes and all kinds of stuff. Very smart guy, don't get me wrong. If we were to go toe-to-toe in a smart contest, I'd concede he'd win. But that doesn't mean he's right on the issues that he talks about. But what he said was somehow life happened on Earth through the primordial ooze that we're going to get to here in a little while. Somehow life began. I'm like, somehow? You can't get things published in scientific journals by somehow, but somehow is the reason for supposedly the Big Bang Theory, everything being in a singularity. There's also... I'm trying not to make fun of it, but it's called the rubber band theory of the universe. That is, the universe is going, stretching out like a rubber band. It gets to its limit, and it stretches back down into a singularity. So they think, well, the universe has expanded and contracted an infinite number of times because the universe is infinitely old. And my question would be, and your evidence for that is somehow. Don't know. But it must have. And here's what we're going to get into. One of the key issues on, it's like, you're going to say, how can people believe this? Because to deny it is to admit that there must have been a God that created the heavens and the earth. And to believe that there is a God, then we must be accountable to Him. That's why they modify the theory of evolution every few years when evidence strikes it right in the face and knocks it down. Instead of saying, "Rass, the theory of evolution is all messed up, let's drop it," they modify it. So we have big bangs, we have warm bangs, we have cold bangs. We have, anybody ever heard of cold, dark matter? Like a little black, nasty thing that's somewhere in the cold. But cold, dark matter is a way of making the math work and trying to explain how the Big Bang could have caused the universe to look like it looks now. Cold dark matter is like super dense nothingness. You've heard of black holes, right? Suck in space, Star Wars, wormholes, all that kind of stuff. Again, most of what we think we know about cosmology, which is the theory of the universe, I think we get from Star Wars. And those are just some guys that have degrees in radio, TV, and film that are writing for Star Trek, and they've read a couple of popular journals, but... no one has ever witnessed a black hole. I don't know if everybody knows that. Again, why do we believe in black holes? Well, personally, I'm unsure, but whether they exist or not. But it makes the math work. That's why I believe. Same thing with cold, dark matter. So some think that up to 90% of space is made up of this stuff called cold, dark matter. Like antimatter. Think of antimatter from Star Trek, and you get a feeling for what cold, dark matter is. It's like, oh, I don't know what antimatter is either. Well, you're getting there. It makes the math work. If you assume it, the math works. And again, it's kind of like somehow. It doesn't work in other fields of science, but it works real well with evolution. So again, so we begin with everything in the known universe compressed into nothingness. Somehow that something caused that to compress. And then something also caused it to blow up at some point in the distant past. So this singularity just exploded. Again, whether it was a hot big bang or a cold little bang or a warm medium bang or whatever it was, caused everything to expand out from some point of nothingness. And it created space, and it created a lot of hydrogen. Hydrogen being the number one, the simplest element on the periodic chart, if you remember that from your chemistry class in high school. And then what began to happen, here's where, again, somehow, I mean, at least somehow was a cause, But again, here's where you got to kind of set the rules of science aside. And there's a term called gravitational collapse. Never been observed, but it makes the math work, and so it's assumed to be true. But all these hydrogen particles converged real close together and got super, super tight, and then created helium, and then beryllium, boron, nitrogen, carbon, He, lithium, beryllium. If you remember it, He, Li, B, B, C, N, O, F, neon, and on down the way through, again, gravitational collapse, and then the gases also collapsed upon themselves and became stars. Okay, the sun's thought to be made up of helium and hydrogen, I believe is the latest that I've studied that. And it's burning. It's also getting smaller every year, and we'll talk about that later. It has some interesting things if you back it up a billion years in the past to see what the sun would be like. The problem is, some of you may understand this, if I were to set, let's say I take a rotten egg, an egg from a chicken that did not give birth, and I leave it sitting, let's say, in the warm sun for 3 weeks to 30 days, and then I were to bust it open in the back corner of this room, my theory would be, even if you were up in the far corner of the room, soon you would be able to smell the gas. And we'll talk about that, because hydrogen sulfide is a big key player in the theory of evolution, as we'll talk about. It's what makes rotten eggs stink, is hydrogen sulfide. Why? Because what happens, gas moves around. It becomes less random. If you have a little compressed thing of gas, they used to sell them at joke shops when I was in junior high, a little bitty vial, and people would bust them open in the boys' room, and it would just horrible smell throughout the whole school. That's what gas does. It expands around to fit up the available space. It doesn't collapse in on itself. Okay? The theory of evolution says that these gases, instead of doing what gas does in every other scientific experiment known to man, every single time gas will expand to fit the available space. However, in the theory of evolution, gas compresses through gravitational collapse. What is gravitational collapse? It's something that allows the math to work, if you assume it to be so. Okay, let's assume that the Big Bang did work. And at some singularity in what we now call space, the Big Bang blew up and everything is moving away from a central point. Okay? Now, the assumption from science would be things would be pretty randomly distributed. That is, you'd be as likely to find a particle here as here as here as here. It would be fairly uniform, the universe, against things moving away from a given point. The universe is not like that. It's as unrandom as it can be. There's big clusters of galaxies here, a whole huge space of nothingness, another group of cluster of stars here, a whole lot of nothingness. There is no evidence that would lend us to believe that it all expanded from a singular point. Here's another interesting thing that I bet most people don't know. You can watch on TV and they'll talk about all kinds of interesting things that are going on with stars and galaxies forming. We'll also say the Bible makes it clear that the universe was created. The creation is completed. What happens now is the second law of thermodynamics, which is things are just kind of breaking up and falling apart. People age, mountain ranges age, everything ages and falls apart unless you add intelligence and design and a lot of energy to keep it running smoothly, if you will. But most of what we know about stars observed through telescopes. Now, if you ever had a telescope, the interesting thing about stars, not looking at planets, because you can change the lens on a telescope and look at a planet, and the planet will be bigger. If you're looking at a star and you put on a higher magnification, it still looks the same. So it's kind of interesting about stars. Most of what we know about galaxy formation, I say the quotation marks around it, comes from a very complex scientific formula that I'm about to explain to you. Most of what we know, or think we know, about the formation and the movement of the universe and universal rotation is based upon the color of the stars. That's how we figure it out. Everything else is based upon an assumption that if the color is this, then that must mean. And a lot of theory about the Big Bang. Anybody ever heard of the red shift? See, It's false in every piece of science that we come across. How many have heard of Doppler radar? Oh, there we go. It's the weather. Yep, Doppler radar says it's like, I have no idea who Doppler was, but it makes nice pictures, and we can say, yep, sure enough, Hurricane Keith is moving up, and we're going to get some of the good old Doppler. Well, the Doppler effect has to do with when things move away. When things are very far away, the farther away they are, the redder they are. The closer they are, the bluer they are. So they see some stars, it's red, it must be moving away faster than the other things that are near it. But again, when you look at the evidence, that falls apart too. So, for example, two stars that are very close to each other, let's say one's blue and one's red, but they're very close to each other, so that means they're all expanding away from this singularity at some point in the distant past for the Big Bang, but now they're moving in opposite directions at very fast velocities, it doesn't work. So, okay, there must be some cold, dark matter to make up the difference to cause that to be so. Stephen Hawking, again, very brilliant guy. I don't remember the name, but he's got a debilitating disease. He's wheelchair-bound. He's to the point now where I think he's only able to move his head a little bit, and so he has a system where he's able to type words, just moving his mouth because the disease is pretty bad with him. But he knew when he was in college, again, obviously he's a brilliant guy, physics was what he was interested in, and so he decided to go into cosmology or theoretical physics. Why? Because he said all you need with theoretical physics is your mind. You don't need data. You don't need evidence. You just need a smart brain and make the math work in different ways. So that's what he did. Why? Because the field of theoretical physics or cosmology. If you've ever seen lots of neat science series, Carl Sagan, he's now dead, avowed atheist. Again, for someone that didn't believe in the existence of God, he sure did hate him and try to make a point of making fun of it every time. But the Big Bang Theory is everywhere. So you would think that, you know, black holes are a done deal. Why? Because we get ingrained with it so much. So what? Again, the purpose of these studies is to train us to look at the evidence. What I say, what anybody says, don't trust us. Because the Bible says, be Bereans. To look at the evidence, see what they say is really true. So if we look at the evidence again, I think we'll see that again, the Bible is true. So again, okay, Big Bang. And different theories say about, you know, a nanosecond after that, some things happened, and another nanosecond after that, some other things happened. Space was created, time was created, elements were created as a result of this explosion, cause unknown. Gravitational collapse caused planets, stars and planets to form, totally contrary to the laws of physics, because then things blow apart. Again, as a child, 4th of July, when firecrackers actually had more gunpowder than I think they probably allow now. But I found out that you can put firecrackers inside of small, closed bodies, like, you know, like Tic Tac, little things that the Tic Tac mints go into. You put a firecracker in that, it's a fairly impressive explosion. You can also drop it inside the... Are there any young... Cover your son's ears there. Other horrible things that you can do that are against the law with firecrackers. But one thing that I found uniformly is that when you blow things up, it makes them more random. For example, blowing up the Tic Tac box didn't create another Tic Tac box more complex somewhere else. It created Tic Tac shrapnel, moving in a random pattern, although normally towards your body, kind of like smoke around a fire when it's very smoky. No matter where you stand, the smoke tends to blow towards you. I'm not sure what physical phenomenons at work there, but the point is when things move away, they do so in a random way. But the universe is not random. Again, the Big Bang Theory is unable to account for why the universe is arranged the way that it is, because it is not the way that it would be arranged had there been a Big Bang and moving around. The other thing that makes it interesting is a quick quiz. Again, don't try to get spiritual, just based on what you're taught in school. Which is older, the Earth or the Moon? Who says the Moon's older? Yeah, see, you know, I'm not going to raise my hand. He's going to make me look stupid. Okay, which say the Earth is older? Ah, you're both wrong. No. The It is typically thought and taught in schools that the moon is much older than the Earth. Why? Because it's dead. Okay? I'm not sure how that logic works, but okay, at one point it was alive, I guess with lots of volcanic activity and stuff. So the Earth is young because the Earth still has stuff going on. There's still volcanic activity. And what's interesting is it's based upon the laws of physics. They're using them here, but you can disregard them when you're talking about evolution. But if the Earth and the Moon were moving away from the singularity at the same time, theoretically they would, through gravitational collapse, since we're like, 250,000 miles apart, you would think they would have formed at about the same time. But nope, theory, again, evolution holds that the moon is extremely old. We'll talk about evidence later on for a young Earth. So that Big Bang supposedly happened about 15 billion years ago. Again, went boom or bang, depending on, they should call it a big boom theory, maybe get published. But everything started moving away. Sun, through gravitational collapse, atoms moved very closely together, became very compact, and ignited and created a nuclear star, which is what our sun is, a nuclear star. It's kind of burning all the time. But it's also burning out. You can't burn something forever unless through supernatural means, like the burning bush. Burning but didn't get consumed. Why? It's also interesting when you say the Bible says it burned with a fire but did not get consumed. Why? Because God understands the laws of physics. Again, he invented them, so he, I'd say, understands them quite fully. So unless there's supernatural intervention, the laws of physics are going to govern everything that goes on. Again, except, according to evolutionists, the theory of evolution, it happened somehow. Why? Because it allows the denial of God. Here's another interesting thing. That the first time that I was doing this study, I was reading this stuff. This is also about the time where the Pope came out and said, theory of evolution is okay as long as you believe that God kind of did it. And I thought, man, that's some bad advisors that gave him that advice. Because, again, it was people with PhDs that are very smart. I'm sure they told the Pope that. So, meanwhile, I go to this. It was called the Eighth International Conversation on General Systems Theory, sponsored by the International Systems Institute, the ISI. So I went to that. It was in Monterey, California. And the guy that I was roommating with was a Roman Catholic priest for 9 years and then became a devout atheist and was doing his doctoral dissertation on universal evolution at the same time that I'm doing a study on creation science. And so God, having a sense of humor, roommates us together. And one of the things that happened was, I think he brought it up about the Pope again, admitting that evolution. I said, man, I think the Pope got some very bad advice there. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, I think that the Earth is only about 6,000 years old, and there's a lot of evidence to support that. And he looks at me and says, nobody believes that. And most people in the world don't believe that. It's like, hey, it's kind of like believing, what he likened to is like, that's like believing the Earth is flat. There's a whole lot of evidence to show if the Earth is not flat. Again, you can do 2,000 years ago, two wells, I believe it was at Archimedes, that you do the math and figure out how far away the sun is and how big the Earth is by light shining a certain time of the day in two wells. That's kind of off the subject. But there's a whole lot of evidence to show that the Earth is round, but there's no evidence to show that the Earth is billions of years old unless you assume evolution. And we'll talk about how that whole argument works. So, okay, so meanwhile we have the sun coalescing, forming a nuclear star somehow, planets going into orbit, somehow orbits are created through gravity in some way, although gravity was, again, they're quick to point out, well, gravity causes the orbits to, but what happened to gravity when everything started moving together in a way that's contrary to what gravity normally does? Somehow it happened. Okay, so now we get into the Big Bang. Now the Earth has been formed by these cooling gases, and out of these gases come hydrogen, helium, all the way down, including, hard minerals. The Earth forms, water's on it. So now we've got the Earth with oceans and land, and the oceans were called the primordial ooze, or the primordial soup. Think of it as an ocean very rich in chemicals. And the theory of evolution goes that at some point about 5 billion years ago, lightning struck the ocean in a very organized way, causing a simple creature to form with a DNA. Now, the interesting thing about DNA is it's almost like a complex biological computer. Even in the simplest worms or amoeba, anything that is considered life that has a DNA, DNA is deoxyribonucleic acid, so you can use that at cocktail parties. That also reminds me, I'll put my finger on where I am so I don't digress too much. The study that I'm doing, it's all on the internet. It's written down. It's about a book. It's about 80 pages. If you go to calvarychapel.com/San Antonio, which is the church website, and click on the word to stand on, and hit me up after we're through, and I'll give you the web address again. But for the people listening to it on tape, it's calvarychapel.com/San Antonio. At the top of the toolbar, click on the word to stand on. And then when that comes up on the left-hand side, click on Other Studies, Creation Science, and you'll have a lot of things that I'm talking about all written out. Of course, after I put it on the internet, I found some grammatical errors as I look back at it, so please forgive those as you go through it. And then after we finish Creation Science, this is also going to lead into the second part, which is called The Logical Defense of the Christian Faith. Now we show that, okay, we've shown that evolution, look at the evidence, is a unscientific model to explain the creation of the universe. Let's look at the Bible. So we'll look at how can we know that the Bible is true. We'll talk about a lot of things that all go to. I also need to go back and pick up the second question that the lawyer had. I talked about the evil God hypothesis. We'll talk about in later studies. But the second one he had was, I don't see how a guy dying on a cross 2,000 years ago has anything to do with me today. Now, that's a cool question when people want to know that, because then you really get to share the gospel with them. But again, I wasn't able to do it in a very organized way, but that became a part of my life to be able to fully explain what I call the logic of the cross. That is how Jesus' death on the cross made sense, how the Bible makes sense, how our faith makes sense, because you can know science and know it well. There's a lot of, again, extremely brilliant, godly people that have written some excellent articles clearly showing that you can be a very smart, scientific kind of guy and believe the Bible is the inspired, infallible Word of God, every word God breathed. It's how the NIV explains it. Okay, so back to DNA. 5 billion years ago or so, again, lightning struck the ocean, and a complex biological creature was created. Now, wow, that's kind of unlikely. Stephen Hawking said somehow it happened, so it must be true. It's like, again, man, somehow. Can you give me a little bit more detail on this somehow? The other thing that I wanted to mention, I've been studying this stuff, so I'm with a guy doing his doctoral dissertation on universal evolution, so I'm popping out all these facts showing that it can't be true. Violate second law of thermodynamics, mathematically impossible using laws of statistical probability. And he's like, yep. That's what he used to believe. It's like, what do you believe now? Well, what he believes is that the universe has a consciousness and it desires order, and so that is what causes the universe to organize. Now, we can laugh at that, but I'd say, praise God, now all we're doing is going to define what God is. Because that's God. Again, it's a false God. Don't get me wrong, that's a false understanding. But as soon as you get to there being a creative agent behind the universe, they're pretty close. Now you got to say, okay, now let's look at the evidence to support your belief that there is a universal force. We found out in Star Wars Part 1 that it's the midichlorians that live in our blood, or at least live in the blood of the people in Star Wars, that is the universal force. If you've never seen Star Wars, and that's over your head like a U2. But a lot of things that people believe, again, you can, I used Star Trek earlier for what we know about the universe. A lot of things that we believe about the universal force comes from Star Wars, which is kind of a Hindu-ish view that, again, the universe has a force. We are at one with the universe. And people around the 60s are much more well-versed in this line of thought. But, Yeah, not that I was looking at anyone in particular. We actually had a conversation. So again, we back up. We've got lightning striking the ocean and it creating life. Now, again, the problem that I've got with that, I've actually seen locations that have been struck by lightning, specifically a tree, and it didn't do the tree any good at all to be struck by lightning. It didn't make the tree evolve into a giant sequoia or something. Now, I make fun of that, but let me also say, with all, and I'm not making this up. I am not making this up. I've read it. I believe it was in either Science or Nature magazine. This is an absolutely, last time I looked, valid theory dealing with evolution, is that cows, at some point in the distant past, after they had already evolved from the primordial ooze that we're going to get to, into cows. These cows are living by the edge of the ocean, an eyeball in the ocean. This part I'm making fun of a little bit. But they began to go back into the ocean. I guess a little deeper each generation. Went a little bit farther. Start growing a tail. And they became whales. Okay? Now I got a little problem with that. That's even worse than somehow. A cow evolved into a whale? That is absolutely the current theory. Now, what this believes is that things... Now, let me also say, I guess I should have from the very beginning defined evolution. Now, you cannot deny that there are different kinds of dogs, that a greyhound is a dog, and that a toy poodle or a chihuahua is a dog. Now, that's explained by genetics. You can, but that is also explained in the Bible by variation within a kind. But they're still the same species, dogs, they're sort of different varieties. So, some people would call that microevolution. I just call it variations of a kind, because that's what the Bible calls it. Macroevolution is that one species evolves into another species. That has never been observed in the fossil record, in a laboratory, anywhere else. And it's like, you guys were going okay trying to say how primordial ooze came simple cells. Yeah, 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 but a cow went back in the ocean and became a whale. Well, it's through mutations. Okay, let's look at that. Let's apply radiation to some sort of living organism. And again, going back to Far Side, when you'd see a fish swimming around outside a nuclear power plant, you know, the fish would have a big eye up on the center of its forehead or something. Why? Because mutation tends to make things sicker. Mutation is not normally a way of making things more complex. Let me also back up. One of the things that's been real popular lately is another thing. Much of what we know about evolution we get from Jurassic Park, the movie. Chaos theory included. I also have read articles and books and on chaos theory, and most people don't understand that either. But Jurassic Park, where's I going with Jurassic Park? It was about dinosaurs and... so anyway, back to the study. That's what I get for... trying to get clever. It'll occur to me shortly. Okay, so back to the ocean, primordial ooze. That's going to drive me crazy until I figure out where I was going to go. But so primordial ooze, lightning struck and it caused DNA to form. This is the most impossible part of the theory of evolution. DNA is, again, I said it's likened unto a computer chip, a very complex replicating code. Put together in a very precise way. Depending on how complex of a DNA chain you get, there are several thousand parts of a DNA chain that have to be together in a very precise way or it won't work. If it's not perfect, it won't work. And in fact, if the math that we're going to get to, did I put this in here? Yeah, we'll get to it. That lightning struck the ocean and caused anything complex to form is about 10 to the 40,000th power to 1 against it forming. And that's assuming that a DNA only has 200 parts and has a lot more than that. It's much more complex. It's a biological computer, the DNA. It's remarkably designed. And what's also funny is sometimes evolutionary biologists will slip and call it a design. They'll say, oh, it looks like a design. It's not really a design. Why? Because if it was designed, there must be a designer. That would mean God, and they're really against that. So it's fascinating. Again, 10 to 40,000 power, we can understand that. Think of it this way. 10, you know, with 40,000 in the superscript above it. The number of electrons in the measured universe is only 10 to the 131st power. That's the number of electrons in the universe. And the electrons are little bitty. Whole, you know, several electrons make up an atom. Millions and billions of atoms make up either trees, people, plants, rocks, whatever. And a whole lot more than that make up the Earth, and a whole lot more than that make up space and stars and galaxies. Only 10 to 131st power is the number of electrons in the measured universe. But the odds of lightning striking the ocean and causing life to form is 10 to the 40,000th power to 1 against. Now, the mathematical definition of impossible is anything greater than 10 to the 50th power to 1 against it that's impossible by definition. So it's extremely impossible, but it gets even more impossible after that. Because, okay, let's say it happened. Somehow it happened. The universal force caused it to happen. Boom, you got a DNA. DNA is not life. It's just a DNA. It's a deoxyribonucleic acid chain, part of an amino acid chain, part of a cell, part of an organism. But supposedly you get that and it just, boom, it's a one-cell organism. Okay, you've got one-cell organism on Earth. What does it eat? Well, coincidentally, it eats hydrogen sulfide because it makes the math work if you assume that they eat that. Nasty diet, but, oh, they also give off oxygen. It's a very elegant theory based upon no evidence known in nature. So you've got these one-celled organisms. Okay, so let's assume they're going to mate and make more one-celled organisms. Mate with what? You're the only one, and there's nothing to eat. Well, just luckily, the chemicals that are around it are exactly what it needs to eat based upon its genetic code in, you know, kept in the DNA. So anyway, you get these two one-celled creatures. The second one, somehow, it also, lightning strikes and makes the same one with the exact same genetic code. Wow. Now again, what's also, doing the math, even assuming a very simple DNA structure, if lightning struck the ocean a trillion times a second for 100 billion years, it's still not enough time for this to have possibly occurred. It's too complex. Again, the example that I used in here, if you think of, let's say we have a manned mission to Mars. We figure out a way to, 3 months or so to get to Mars? Is that what it's figured based upon? Unless you go warp speed, of course, then you can get there on impulse power or whatever. So we have a manned mission to Mars. And whoever the astronaut is hops out of the spacecraft and walks around on the surface of Mars. Again, they got a spacesuit that allows them to hang out in the environmental conditions. See something shiny on the ground up ahead. Walks, looks down and says, wow, it is a Rolex watch. It's diamond studded. It's got a nice gold band. And it's keeping perfect time according to Greenwich Mean Time or whatever astronauts use for their watches. Two possibilities. One is somebody put it there, which is the one that I would argue for, or it naturally occurred. Now, be aware that a Rolex watch, even diamond-studded, gold band, keeping perfect time, is far, far simpler than the simplest DNA molecule and simplest creature. So you'd be more likely to find a Rolex watch that just naturally, again, lightning struck some gold and iron and diamonds and just put together in that way. That's much more likely than it is than that lightning struck the Earth to create a creature with a DNA. It's just impossible. But again, theory of evolution, it really falls apart after that. It starts out being mathematically impossible, and it kind of becomes more impossible as we go. So again, the animals mate. Where's the other mate come from? I don't know. We'll talk about it because they would say, yeah, but where did Cain's mate come from in the Bible? We'll talk about that when we get to it. But the answer is he married one of his sisters. The Hebrews, when they talked about genealogies, they tended to not usually list women. They only listed men. So he went off and married one of his sisters. Because I guess the theory in evolution is he went and married some Neanderthals or some Australopithecus or something. And we'll talk about that later as well. Nope, he just married one of his sisters. So again, they mate, and they become lots of more one-celled creatures all over the ocean. And a lot of time passes. And then something called punctuated equilibrium. What's punctuated equilibrium means? That means the latest theory in evolution is that there are millions of years that pass with no evolution happening. And then, boom, in a very short period of time, they evolve like crazy into more complex creatures. The reason why they do this is because the fossil record, life begins very suddenly. Again, just like if there was like a giant flood and that created a shallow ocean environment throughout the world. But punctuated equilibrium happens, and these one-celled creatures are going along fine for millions of years, and then all of a sudden they start evolving like crazy. Cause unknown. Somehow they just radiation in some way, although radiation in every other example tends to kill organisms. In this example, the radiation causes mutations. And instead of mutating into, when people mutate or animals mutate or plants mutate, they don't do as well. They tend to be better when they're healthy than when they're mutating. Again, unless their genetic scientists very carefully causing them to mutate in very controlled laboratory conditions, which make corn yield more or whatever, taste better or whatever, be less prone to pests or whatever it is. But again, that's scientists with design and intelligence expending energy. I got no problem with that kind of stuff happening. Some sort of radiation happens, they begin mutating like crazy, and they become more complex over time. Now, this is also absolutely contrary to, we're going to talk about probably next week now, is the second law of thermodynamics, which is probably the most rigorous law in all of science. Things don't violate the second law of thermodynamics, except in the theory of evolution. So they mutate like crazy, they become more complex. Now here's the part that gets harder. What we have here in the theory of evolution is simple one-celled creatures, animals, if you will, evolving, but eventually becoming not just land-based animals, but land-based plants like redwood trees, tulips, pineapple trees, mushrooms, all that evolve from this simple one-celled organism through mutations, even though mutations in laboratory conditions don't ever show to mutate into anything higher. DNA controls what we are to be. And again, all that's explained by genetics. It's been around for a couple hundred years. A guy named Mendeleev came up with a theory of genetics with dominant and recessive genes and stuff. If your mom's got green eyes and your dad has blue eyes, what are the odds that you're going to have brown eyes? All that's explained by genetics. Has nothing to do with evolution. That's the hard part that I have figuring out is, okay, how did your one-cell plant become both a redwood tree and man? Well, again, then you have these diverging branches from the evolutionary tree. You guys ever seen it? Actually, in the Museum of Natural History, a guy did it as a joke from what I've seen. It shows, again, like a real simple animal, and then it becomes like a furry mammal, and then it becomes like a bigger animal, and then it becomes like an ape or a monkey, then it becomes an ape, then it becomes almost like a man, only more hairy and the jaw's bigger. And then next thing you know, it's man. You think, well, there you go. There's the way that it happened. That is absolutely made up. A guy did that as a joke. But it's in the Museum of Natural History at the Smithsonian. Hello? It's not science. But again, it's to believe otherwise is to be forced to believe in the existence of God, which they're not comfortable with. So they began to mutate, they made plants, they made other animals. The fish began to grow legs and lungs and crawl up on land. And then at some point, the fish with legs began to mutate into plants. I'm not sure how it worked. And I'm not sure what they ate. Because you've got to remember, there are no plants at this time in the theory of evolution. Plants came later after animals. So it's like, what did they eat? Well, they ate chemicals. And then through the digestive process, they produced oxygen and nitrogen, the air that we breathe. That never happened in science, but that's the theory. So they mutate like crazy. And they're also called, they're either called fortuitous mutations or lucky monsters. And actually, lucky, it sounds like it's making fun of it, but I've also seen them called that in I believe, in evolutionary articles too. Lucky monsters, that is, mutations that, by God, they just coincidentally happen to be much better suited to live than did their ancestors. Very interesting. Also, if you say, yeah, but what about Darwin? What he found on the Galapagos Island? Here's another interesting thing. You've heard of survival of the fittest. Okay. Now, Darwin says survival of the fittest leads to animals having more offspring. Okay? So let's look at survival of the fittest. Do you know what the definition of survival of the fittest is? This is circular reason, so it gets real confusing when I talk about it. But okay, so the theory is that survival of the fittest leads to animals that have the most offspring. So then when you back it up and figure out, how do you figure out survival of the fittest? Is whatever has the most offspring is survival of the fittest. So what you have in an elegant formula is Darwin predicted that the animals that have the most offspring will have the most offspring. And again, you can't hardly deny that, but it's not science. What he found was, as you would expect to find, here's an example that Darwin said, here's an example of evolution. He found a flower that had a very deep, like the petals were long, and like for a hummingbird, to be able to get in and get the nectar out of the, again, my plant biology is escaping me, whatever part of the plant, of the flower that produces nectar, the hummingbird would need a very long bill and able to get in there. So Darwin predicted that evolution would have created a long-billed hummingbird somewhere on the island. Sure enough, he sees a long-billed hummingbird and says, well, there you go. I would argue that a designer would create an animal suited to its environment, which is what you have. Again, both equally explain it. So we'll talk a little bit about Darwinism next week, because Darwin's what is the one that gave the people that wanted to believe that God didn't create the earth, Darwin gave them a way. And his way was through mutations and survival of the fittest. Again, what is survival of the fittest? Well, it means whatever produces the most offspring. What is survival of the fittest cause? Produces the most offspring. There you go. Again, how can you argue against that? A equals A. Yep, kind of hard to refute that. But again, it's not very useful. Science is only useful if it can predict other things. And all the things that, if you assume evolution to be true, what we could expect to find, we don't find. And it's like, yeah, but what about the geologic layers? And what about the fossils that are found that show? What about radiometric dating? We'll talk about those. And if they're new things, again, we'll talk about them. But the bottom line is, evolution is based upon no evidence, no scientific evidence. It's not based on data. It's not based on math. It's not based on logic. The only thing that the theory of evolution or the model of evolution has going for it is that to believe in it allows one to intellectually deny the existence of God, even though it's not based on science. And what's fascinating is people in science believe that we who are creationists do so because we don't understand science. So we'll finish up next week. And if anyone, I just remember one of my previous digressions. They didn't remember the Jurassic Park tie-in. But it's on the internet. But if we're able to get our copy machine fixed, we'll also have copies of the notes that cover the things that we're going to cover. Because I know it covers a lot of ground. And it's like, now what do you say again? How many electrons are there in the universe? And that type of stuff. So it's all down and on the internet. Again, the thing to remember, we'll cover a lot of different things, and if you've got questions, I'll be happy to entertain those after we finish. But the reason that we're doing this is to give us a firmer, because again, obviously, many if not most of us are born again, we already believe the Bible, that allows us to know that the Bible is scientifically true, it's logically true. We don't just believe it due to blind faith, we believe it based upon the evidence. So I would encourage anybody that's listening to this, look at the evidence and make your decision based upon the evidence. And you'll see, I believe, that the biblical model of creation is the only one that the evidence supports. Let's close there in prayer.